through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We're getting you guys ready for Seahawks training camp with our countdown of the 15 most important Seahawks, and that continues today with number 8, Daryl Taylor.
Counting down to the most interesting Seahawk on the 2021 roster with Jake and Stacy. Number 8.
And the list continues of our 15 most interesting Seahawks with number 8. And this one was quite controversial. Daryl Taylor. So a peek behind the curtain.
What?
A peek behind the curtain. Daryl Taylor originally was number 14 or 15 on our list. And the three of us had a big debate in the sports pit before we even started the countdown, where I said, you guys, it is so important that Daryl Taylor, who hasn't stepped foot on the field in a regular or postseason game for the Seattle Seahawks, has suited up in practice, has never played a down in the NFL. It is so important that he be higher on this list than Carlos Dunlap. Not because Carlos Dunlap isn't hugely important, but when I'm looking at who I'm going to feel at the end of the year better about having a great year, if you were to say, hey, the Seahawks leader in sacks is going to get, let's say he gets 9 sacks. Who do you want it to be? If I got a pick, it would be a young defender. Mm-hmm. It would be someone that would be here on a rookie contract for a while. And I know Daryl Taylor is going to play some sandbacker. You're going to talk about that in your preview. But Daryl Taylor, as a young guy on a rookie deal with a ton of upside, beat out anyone else in that category. So, Jake, what makes him number 8 on this list?
Before I get to that, peeling back the curtain even more so,
wow,
it was highly controversial.
There's two left.
We are peeling back. This is layers and layers. You didn't think that there was
another
second curtain. Oh, there is.
A second curtain.
There is.
What?
Now, here's one of the things that ended up happening is I felt like in this meeting, as we were debating on our top 15, Stacy Ross gets up and she is making the speech of her life about Daryl Taylor. And I felt like there should have been some patriotic music in the background. It was like the forefathers here as they were getting ready to declare our Declaration of Independence. That's how Stacy was. That's how fervent she was. The fervor that she spoke with about Daryl Taylor. And you know what? When somebody's riding hot like that,
you got to do it.
Got to do it. And made a great point.
I think I convinced you.
Well, you did. But also, I think with Daryl Taylor, it's odd to put someone of this importance,
top 10.
They did not play a season ago.
Nope.
And they are still basically, essentially a rookie. You don't even know if they are going to play necessarily at that defensive end position, which they highlighted initially that he's going to play. They need to find a role for him. That is clear. And that is exactly what they're trying to do with Daryl Taylor at this potential Sam linebacker position here. And what they're trying to create is a Bruce Irvin type of role, type of mold, with Daryl Taylor, where it's not just about playing the outside linebacker position. It's about trying to get your best edge defenders on the field at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like Daryl Taylor can answer that call. And I know it's controversial when it comes to KJ Wright, and everybody loves KJ Wright, and everybody would love to see him back. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, you do have to think about the future. You do have to think about, can this group move forward? And with Daryl Taylor, they have the ability to do so. Get younger, get cheaper, and also get more explosive. And that's what Daryl Taylor brings to the table. They were so high on this guy that they thought about potentially not drafting Jordan Brooks with their first round pick. Oh, no. They thought about Daryl Taylor as their first round selection. They ended up going with Jordan Brooks. They traded back up into the second round a year ago to get this guy because they were so high on his potential. From a lot of the rumblings around the building and from what I was hearing last year, they were super excited about him. And honestly, to the point where I thought that he was going to get on the field, they teased us with this bit of nugget that Daryl Taylor would have been practicing more and may have gotten himself onto the field had the Seahawks advanced farther into the playoffs, even into the next round, so into that divisional round, rather than losing in the wild card round.
That week.
He was. And so you see Daryl Taylor and got a chance to see him in minicamp, in OTAs just a little bit. And there's not a whole lot that you can gather because you're not full pass rush. You're not going. But he looked good. He looked explosive coming off the line of scrimmage. And they need him to step up in that role in a big, big way. Not just for this year, to get them more dynamic, more explosive. And to finish that thought that I just kind of moved on from, the word that I kept hearing from people within that building was Frank Clark. We think that this guy has Frank Clark level ability to rush the passer, to be explosive off the edge. That's how highly they think of him. And if that can be the case, that will be a huge development for this team. You add him to Carlos Dunlap. You add him to Benson Mayo with Kerry Hyder Jr., with Alton Robinson. I think that that becomes a very dynamic group. And when you talk about their depth, Daryl Taylor is going to be a big reason why we look at their depth and say, this is good or this is bad. And I think when you look at that aspect of it, it puts a lot of weight, it puts a lot of pressure on Daryl Taylor, even though he hasn't even played a down of football yet in the NFL.
Now, that's what makes him one of the more interesting Seahawks on our most important Seahawks list, is he's the only one in this top 10, certainly as we inch closer to the top five, that hasn't played a down in the NFL, right? I mean, it's hard to tell fans, look, this guy's so important, when they haven't yet seen him, which is why it's important to stress that, like, it's not just about making sure you have a deep pass rush and you're great up front and your front seven as a whole when he's in there as Sam Backer. It's not just that, although that is a huge part of what makes guys like him, guys like Carlos Dunlap, guys like Jordan Brooks so important, that you get your front seven kind of shored up. It's also that you have a guy, a young, cheap defender, at a time, and we talked about this a bit with Jordan Brooks, at a time when the Seahawks have gone a couple years now without drafting a Pro Bowl defensive player, Shaquille Griffin being the last guy as a Pro Bowl alternate. It would be great for the Seahawks to once again find a way to strike gold on a draft pick. And you certainly use more capital on this guy than you have on quite a few other defensive players. Now, let's flash back to what Jim Nagy, director of the Senior Bowl, former Seahawks scout, former pro scout, as to what he had to say about Daryl Taylor. He mentioned Frank Clark as well. He said he's really put together. He's powerful. He's combative. He plays hard. He is a Seahawk. Now, is what you've seen from Daryl Taylor either on tape or what you've heard from people, when it's he is a Seahawk, what does that mean?
Well, there is a clip that I would highly recommend you guys go look back in the internet. It is a moment of Daryl Taylor walking out onto the field in Knoxville, and this is in his college days, and there is somebody in the crowd that has their phone, and they're recording them walking out on the field, and they say something to Daryl Taylor, and Daryl Taylor has a few choice words right back. And you just talk about the chippiness, the attitude in which he has. I think it is a much needed addition to this group. There's also stories about Daryl Taylor in practice in college, how he is not afraid to mix it up at all. And so it's not just the talent. It's not just the explosiveness in which he brings to the table. It's also some of that edge that he brings as well that I think that is needed for this team. And I can't wait to see it end up, manifesting itself out on the field. And when you look at Daryl Taylor, one of the other aspects that's so important, and Stacey, you highlight this, the lack of hits that you've had with your group in the draft, your rookies over the last, I would say, 4 or 5 years defensively. It's not, Daryl Taylor isn't just a, man, it would be nice, man, this would be icing on the cake. This is a necessary, it has to work out. It absolutely has to work out with. They cannot afford to be wrong with him because it leaves more gaps.
Right.
If you're frustrated by the Seahawks not going out there and making these splash moves in the offseason, it's not only because Russell Wilson has a high price tag. It's not only because Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams eventually will have high price tags. It is because you have not hit in the draft.
So
what is
important.
That? What does that leave? It leaves holes. It leaves lots of holes. And so what does John Schneider in the front office end up having to do? Which I think they've done about as good of a job as anybody, a la the maintained level of success, the maintained ability to get to the playoffs. But they have been excellent patchwork guys. I mean, it's like the commercial of what is that stuff? The sealant stuff where you just slap it right on the
Flex Seal.
Yeah, it's that commercial.
Only the Titanic.
There are just holes everywhere, and you see John Schneider, Trent Kirshner in that front office just plugging them up, slapping them on left and right. And it's because of that.
I mean, that was number nine, DJ Reed, finding him on the waiver wire that we had him yesterday.
That's right.
Boom, Flex Seal.
But you go and sign Kerry Hyder Jr., you go and sign Benson Mayo, you go and sign Carlos Dunlap, and you have to, you know, take that risk and that chance of him going on the open market and coming back at a smaller price point. Why do you have to do that? Because you have to spread the wealth to fill out the holes on your roster. So guys like Daryl Taylor, guys like Jordan Brooks, them panning out is significant for your program in terms of your needs, in terms of the amount of holes or you know, the not as many holes that you have to plug going into the future. And so when you talk about Daryl Taylor this year, it will be vital for them to take the next step as a pass rushing unit with Daryl Taylor's contributions. It will be even more important after this year because you have four guys, if you include Alden Smith, that are over 30 years old that you're relying heavily to be a part of your pass rush and to be those guys that are going to be your main contributors in your pass rush. That's not sustainable. Right. That's not something you can count on for years down the road. You need Daryl Taylor. You need Alton Robinson. You need those guys to emerge and to play really, really good football so that you can count on them, not just for this year, but the years after that. That's why Daryl Taylor cracks our top 10 and is number 8 on this list.
Well said, Jake. Loved the point about the draft picks. And that is number 8. Daryl Taylor is our countdown of the 15 talks of 2021 continues. Make sure to listen every weekday at 1 p.m. as we kick off another player. All right, it is time for Headline Rewrites, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Following their series win over the weekend against the Oakland A's, Mark Feinson of MLB.com reports the Mariners have strong interest in Royals all-star utility man Whit Merrifield. What is the real headline?
No joke here. It's just how you should really be reading it. The headline should say Mariners are not a playoff team unless they add to this roster. That's what you need to take away. The Mariners are banged up with their starting rotation. People have varying levels of faith in what Justin Dunn or Sheffield can be when they get back. They need more power in their lineup, or at least guys that can get on base more often. We've seen the bottom of the lineup sometimes impress us, and other times it's full of Ks and ground outs. And so I think that you need to add second baseman, right-handed bat, ideally both, or a starting pitcher to this team before they can even get a chance at a wild card.
Yeah, on any given night, a third of your lineup's giving you nothing.
Right.
Kelnick right now is giving you nothing. You're not getting much out of Shed Long, Dylan Moore. I mean, that's three guys who are in there most nights that are giving you zero. Hard to win that way. Yet they are.
Yeah. Are you nervous at all about Kelnick? Because my better judgment is telling me not to panic about a 22-year-old prospect that has, what, collectively 2 months in the majors?
Yeah, can I be nervous without being panicked?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not panicked over Jared Kelnick. He's really young, and he's shown still some positivity. And I thought going the other way late in the game to pick up a single yesterday was a really impressive bat. He had the nice walk the night before that ended up leading to the winning run. So he's done some things to contribute to the team, even while he hasn't quite figured out major league pitching. I'm a little nervous, sure. But I'm certainly not panicked or anywhere close to it.
Headline Rewrites.
Over the weekend, it was reported that Cardinals defensive end Chandler Jones requested a trade out of Arizona at some point this past offseason. What is the real headline?
We didn't see this one coming, says Cardinals source, following the departure of Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson, and Calais Campbell. Now, we had Josh Weinfuss of ESPN on with us to preview the Cardinals season, and one of the most interesting things that he said, in part because it was a really strong critique of Steve Keim, their GM, is the Cardinals have seemed more concerned with winning the offseason than they have with winning in the actual football season.
What do you mean?
He meant that the Cardinals are... fans might come away thinking, or that potentially he has come away thinking the Cardinals are focused on making a big splashy move, trading for Hopkins, which I think that they obviously fleece the Texans, but trading for Hopkins, signing J.J. Watt, making all these moves, and then ending up third or fourth in the division each year because they aren't focused on making moves that could help them, like maybe cutting ties with Cliff Kingsbury or, I don't know, finding a new GM, what have you. He said that that could be the reason both Cliff and especially Steve Keim are on the hot seat, but I just liked the take.
There's an old phrase, and Terry Francona is the one who told it to me first, which is manage like a fan and you're going to end up one. It's true for general managers as well. When you are after the fan approval, you're going down the wrong path. That's why every time we talk about the Mariners and where they're at right now, and people say, but the fans have, who cares? The fans will come around when you are ready to win. Mm-hmm. You have to get yourself in the right position. Now, appealing to the players, that's very different. But you cannot manage or general manage or own a team strictly to make and appease fans on a day-to-day or year-to-year basis. You have to do what's right for winning, and the fans will respond to it.
Well, and you can only say so much about playing the teams in your division and those teams being tough when you've had losing records, because that involves obviously losing to not just the teams in your division, but teams outside of it, including teams you should be beating, because the Cardinals have had some pretty solid rosters and have yet to have it pay off.
You think Kyler Murray's good?
Yeah.
How good?
I think his ceiling is the second highest ceiling in the NFC West behind Russell
Wilson. So you think he's not quite Russell Wilson good, but he's close?
I think that I need to see a little bit more from him, which I think we can because he's so exceptionally young, to make me think he can win without relying on mobility. And it's such a trope, but also he has been more successful and the offense has been more successful when he's been healthier.
He's so fast.
Do you think it could take the Cardinals further than Matthew Stafford could take the Rams?
I think the Rams have more weapons than the Cardinals. And honestly, a better head coach.
And a better defense.
I think Cliff Kingsbury has proven he hasn't been exceptionally effective at being OC and head coach. And I don't know if it's the problem is separating those two needs to happen, or if he just doesn't know how to take advantage of having one of the top young quarterbacks.
All right, one more hypothetical.
Yeah.
Would the Rams be better this year with Matt Stafford or with Kyler Murray?
Kyler Murray.
That's what I think. I totally agree with that. Yes. But I'm not a big Stafford fan. I think that guy's way over. He's literally never won a playoff game.
Can I tell you guys the weirdest dream I have, which is how I know I'm such a pathetic sports loser? I had a dream the other night that there was video on ESPN of Matt Stafford limping into camp, and there was a report that he would have to go on the PUP list because he injured his knee. That was a dream that I had.
That's weird.
Well, next
could
headline.
Be a reality.
Headline rewrite.
Like, what a dumb dream just to have, like, there's, I'm watching TV in my dream.
Don't dream about Matt Stafford.
Okay. Curtis?
This story continues to develop. Adam Schefter with the latest on the Aaron Rodgers-Green Bay Packers situation. Schefter reports the Packers are offering concessions and are close to an agreement that would bring Rodgers back to Green Bay for at least this season. Sources tell ESPN deal is not done, but it is close. What's the real headline?
Packers fans can breathe a sigh of relief knowing one more NFC championship loss is in store. I know, har har har, I'm punching up because the Seahawks have yet to get to one since 2015. But Aaron Rodgers, you know, he is one of the best quarterbacks ever. There are few quarterbacks, and I'm talking like two or three, that could make a team rework a contract to make it easier for the quarterback to leave them because he's so good and is basically holding them hostage. But at the same time, like, he hasn't helped take them to the promised land in a time when other quarterbacks have.
Why are the Packers doing this after they spent their first round pick trading up for Jordan Love?
Because they, well,
why? Why? Why would you do both of those things?
You mean, okay, wait. Why would you rework this? Because you're already in too deep. You're already in too deep. You know that your best chance to win right now is keeping Aaron Rodgers. You know that it's easier for you to cut ties with him next year cap-wise even before reworking this deal.
Do they think Jordan Love is the future?
They must have at the time. They traded up for him.
Then go with it.
But I wonder if they feel like our best shot at winning right now is with Rodgers.
You said it earlier, that quarterbacks on, like, franchise quarterbacks who are still on their rookie deal is your best opportunity to win.
Yeah.
You're going to sit here for 2 years of Jordan Love where you're not going to play him. Then you're finally going to go into it in year three. And in the meantime, you didn't give Aaron Rodgers the weaponry he needed to try to be better because you traded up to draft his replacement? I don't get it, man. That is a mess.
I wonder if they were hoping that Aaron Rodgers could be traded. What's tough is they would have taken a loss to their cap in dead money were they to trade before June 1st. After June 1st, I think they could have made $16 million in space by spreading it out.
Okay.
So you could have done it after June 1st, but maybe another team just didn't give you what you thought he was worth.
But your alternative is to still be stuck there with both of these quarterbacks on your roster for at least another year.
Yeah.
And you're giving away the farm to a guy who's already quit on you
now,
twice. I don't understand this at all.
What about this? What if they haven't been convinced with what they've seen from Jordan Love?
Well, then you should be fired. If you drafted and traded up for Jordan Love and you don't like what he's done in practice, you should be fired. You never should have drafted him to begin with. Gutenkirst is too busy trying to spell his own name. What is the deal? Isn't that his name?
Gutenkunst.
Gutekunst.
Whatever, man. Gutendunst at the moment.
Oh, got him. The text line always sounding off with, well, Russ can't take the Seahawks to a Super Bowl, and Rodgers has. Both quarterbacks have been in Super Bowls. The joke is that it's fun to make fun of Aaron Rodgers. Always fun.
And easy.
And easy because he's just so ornery and pretentious.
And he quit on his team.
Easy target. All right, back to the Mariners. What are you willing to give up in a trade if you want to bring in one of two second basemen who could be acquired via trade? We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Mike Salkin for Jake today. And Mike, I'm going to call a bit of an audible with what we're going to talk about. I still do want to ask you about two names you'd like to see the Mariners try to make a run at the trade deadline. Before we get to that, though, I was interested in hearing what you have to say about a couple texts that we're getting right now. I'll explain why we're getting them. So in our last segment, one of the headlines was about the Cardinals and the mistakes that they've had. And we were talking in general about Kyler Murray's ceiling. And I said he's the second best quarterback in the NFC West, or that his ceiling is the second highest, given that I think Russell Wilson is the best quarterback right now. But that the Cardinals have kind of wasted opportunities to win while he's on his rookie deal. And I saw quite a few texts about how Russell Wilson was better when he was younger and is not as good now. And I think, Mike, and this has been not like a pet peeve of mine this offseason, but what I think Russell Wilson's comments have done is made people question whether or not he's good or as good as he wants to be, which is maybe fair to question the latter. This team was most successful with Russell Wilson on his rookie deal. Russell Wilson is an objectively better player now by almost every measure, but the team is not winning as much. And those are two different things. And there are reasons related to the team not winning as much to Russell Wilson. For instance, it is harder to win when you're paying your quarterback 20% of the cap. That's a fact. It is easier to win when you have less money going to your quarterback so you can spend elsewhere. To think that Russell Wilson has gotten worse, though, I think is wrong.
Surprised that people are out there saying that Russell Wilson's gotten worse.
I think people people are mad at Russell Wilson and the comments he made. And instead of saying, man, I hate that he made those comments, but he's an objectively good quarterback, it's been Russell Wilson is the worst. He can't take us to the promised land. Ditch him.
Is some of the conversation Russ isn't as fast? Because I think there is some legitimacy there. Russ doesn't affect the running game as much. Russ doesn't escape from pressure and come up with 25 to 30 yard runs. I think there's some validity to some of those questions about Russell's legs.
I think what I'm seeing is people saying Russell Wilson, in advocating for himself, thinks he's like Tom Brady. Tom Brady has won 7 rings. Where's Russell Wilson's rings?
But that doesn't make him worse than he was. It makes him worse than Tom Brady.
Well, yeah.
Right?
But the problem is, I think, first of all, Brady has skewed perceptions and ideals of what a quarterback or franchise should do. Like, the Patriots and Tom Brady are an outlier of how easy it is to get to Super Bowls and win Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
Just period.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost impossible to be able to replicate what they've been able to do. I think that Russell Wilson coming out saying, I want to be the best, and I, in my opinion, making it clear that I should have more say over how we win. I want to win. I know how to win. I think people are saying, but do you know how to win because you haven't?
Yeah, I see. I think that what you're hearing then maybe is a confluence of two different things and people getting confused between ability and mentality and
yes.
words and actions. I don't think Russell's actions have gotten worse significantly. If anything, you're right. I think he's a better quarterback overall. I do have some concern about what things will look like in the future as his legs continue to go on him, just as he naturally gets older. You know, part of being a 5'10" quarterback is an ability to use your legs to do some different things, throwing lanes, etc. What happens when that goes away? Yeah, I think those are very real questions. I think the other real question is, you know, Russell for years overcame what was always a god-awful offensive line because of those legs. And as those start to go and the offensive line doesn't significantly improve, it does Russell look a little bit worse than he did? Maybe, yes, mm-hmm. at times. His arm's better, his decision-making's better, his creativity is still fantastic. The question is, can they put some of the right pieces around him? And what I think hasn't gotten better since then, drafting has gotten objectively worse.
Mm-hmm.
How many guys on those Super Bowl teams were late round draft picks playing for nothing that they were able to go all the way with because they drastically outplayed their draft position versus, as you said earlier, how many guys you have now that aren't even part of your draft pick past that are now on your team
your
because your own draft picks didn't make it?
Your entire secondary, your starting secondary right now on paper are guys you didn't draft.
But it's easy to point at Russ for people, right? He's been loud. He's said some things that people don't like. And he's the face of the franchise. It's easy. Last couple of years ago, it was Pete. Now, all of a sudden, it's going to be Russ. For some reason, it's never John Schneider. And maybe it's because he's got the longest deal of anybody. But
it's never a GM.
Never?
No.
You pointed at Steve Keim earlier in Arizona. So
how many people before I said GM of the Cardinals knew who Steve Keim was?
Fair. But you were willing to point at him and say that's the problem there. It's not Kyler Murray. Maybe it's Cliff Kingsbury. But overall, it's the GM. I'm not saying that John Schneider is the problem here by any
right.
stretch. Just that it's easy to point at Russ. It's easy to point
yes.
at Pete because they're loud. John's quiet. You don't hear much from him, right? When he comes on, he's, aw, shucks, and, you know, offensive lineman, don't come off the O-lineman tree, and he makes you laugh. But I just, it's interesting that very little of the finger pointing goes in that direction.
Yeah, he's so behind the scenes. You know what's interesting with the three of these men, too, is I feel like the combination of the three of them on paper should be what gets you to Super Bowls. You have a GM that's been incredibly successful with almost every facet of GMing outside of drafting more recently. You have a head coach that's one of the winningest head coaches and the winningest in franchise history, I think. God, I think he's out of the top 20 in NFL history, but one of the he is a great head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got one of the top three quarterbacks in football, three, four, five, whatever. Top five, I would think most people would say safely in the top five. That's a trio that should be helping you get to Super Bowls. And instead, you've had pretty key mistakes from all three of those people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that most of the mistakes for me has come in the roster. And for me, the defense hasn't been up to snuff for the last few years. It's what lost them the Dallas game in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's what lost them the Rams game in the postseason. Their defense hasn't been at the level that Pete Carroll wants it to be. I think Russell's played well enough.
Well,
I think
about,
Pete has coached well enough.
And what about this run? From the 7-2-4, 7-10, 7-10. It's easy to point at Russ because he's not delivered. What hasn't he delivered to you? A Lombardi? Is he supposed to go out and get one at the Lombardi store himself? Or did he give you a career high in touchdowns last year? Yes, I'll point to Russ's second half of the season and say that was a problem. You need to be better. You're being paid $35 million a year. You're saying you want to be the best. Then be the best. Don't get more interceptions than Tom Brady. Don't get more interceptions than these other great quarterbacks. If you want to be better than Mahomes and you want people to talk about your legacy, don't throw 13 interceptions in a season. That's bad for,
yeah.
for a top quarterback. But
I
don't know why you
there.
Expect one quarterback to be leading you to a Super Bowl when you also have a defense that almost gave up 7,000 passing
yards. Yeah, there's more than enough blame to spread around. I think what you're hearing and what I think you're alluding to there is the fact that, hey, look, Russ, if you want to talk, if you think you want to get the same level of concessions
right.
that Rodgers and Brady get,
right.
you've got to deliver at the level of Rodgers and Brady.
Fair.
That, to me, I think is a fair comment to make back to Russell. It's not that he's gotten worse. It's that his aspirations and his the category he wants to be placed in has grown and grown and grown and ascended to such a level that, okay, You want to talk like Brady and Rodgers, you've got to deliver like Brady and Rodgers. I thought Russ had a really good year. I mean, the Rams game was a disaster for everybody. Same with the Bills game. The one I point to as a problem last year was the Giants loss.
Mm-hmm.
He had the ball in his hands late in the game with a chance to go win and unfortunately wasn't able to do it. If there's one thing I blame Russ for last year, it's that. They got smoked by the Bills. They just weren't as good. They got smoked by the Rams in that game. They just weren't as good on that day.
Yep.
But the Giants were a bad team, and Russ had the ball in his hands late in the game with a chance to win. Didn't go anywhere with that drive. You got it. You have to deliver.
Well, I think there's two different things here. One, Russell Wilson right now has not performed up to where he presumably wants his legacy to be. You're not as good as Tom Brady. You haven't been as good as Tom Brady. You're not as good as Aaron Rodgers. You haven't been as good as Aaron Rodgers. That's just how it is. But if you want to be that way, then meet those expectations. I don't think it's the same as saying he's not good, though.
So what does he need to do to meet the expectations of being at that level? What's left for
him? Well, that's what's fascinating about it, because I think for so many years in his career, people have pointed to, well, he could be those guys if he had a better offensive line. He could be those guys if they had a more creative playbook. Think of Russell Wilson and Sean McVay's offense. Well, this is the closest you're going to get to being able to do that. You're running out of excuses to say it's someone else's fault and not his.
Yeah, and I think that's where I differ on that whole thing. I don't think that it's been the creativity. I think that they run a different style. They're not asking Russ to do some of the same things that Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady does.
Mm-hmm.
He's not asked to throw the ball as often, and I don't know that that is his chief skill set. What Russ tends to be is a creative winner, and they've put him in position to make a couple of huge throws a game, manage the game well, and do the business that way, which I think he's best at. So you and I are never really going to agree on that, but we're going to get a chance to watch him, and we'll see how different this offense ends up being. You know, you asked me earlier who I'd be most intrigued to see. I said Darrell Taylor, and that's still true. But overall, isn't Shane Waldron sort of the key figure more than anybody else this year, the new offensive coordinator, to see what this thing is going to look like and how it's different?
I think both of us would clearly agree, though. Russell Wilson, best quarterback in the NFC West. And anyone who thinks he's objectively not good or not better than he was when he was 22.
Better than Brady, too, isn't he? Like, wouldn't you rather have Russell Wilson than Tom Brady? I understand Brady brings some other things to the table.
Yeah.
But I think the world of Russell Wilson, that hasn't changed.
Yes.
Going to hold him to a high standard because he holds himself to one. But the idea of not thinking that Russ is one of the absolute elites in
the
game, you're nuts.
All right, what I need to know coming your way next. Text your questions in, 710-710. Mike Salkin for Jake Heaps. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions in to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. Any question you have, Mike Salk in for Jake Heaps today. Mike, I'll start with this one. What I need to know, are the Mariners going to get a starting pitcher this deadline? Mm. Berrios, Gibson, Anderson, Marquez, etc.
Some good names out there. Are they going to go for one of those big ones? I don't know. I like Gibson. That's been a name that I've sort of had on my list for a while. Obviously, Marquez is a really fantastic player. I just think he's going to be too expensive in terms of prospects to give up. It sure seems like right now they seem to be more in on position players, whether it's a second baseman. Yeah, they need a right-handed bat. There's no doubt about that. They're not getting enough contribution from about a third of their lineup, especially at second base, has been a mess. But I just don't see how you move forward without bringing in some starting pitching depth.
Now, here's the other side of things. Is there anyone else you have your eye on as we approach the trade deadline? Because another thing you could look at is a right-handed second baseman.
Yeah, and we've seen a couple of those. They weren't able to get Adam Frazier. Okay, he's a left-handed hitting second baseman, but a really good player. You know, the two big names are going to be Whit Merrifield now and Jonathan Scope, and I think there's value in both. You got to give up more to get Merrifield, although he's a better player, and you'd have him for the next few years as part of what you hope is going to be a championship window. With Scope, he's just a guy who's going to be better than what you've got for the rest of this year. It doesn't cost you much. And if you like him, maybe you end up signing him for the future. I just think some of these things give you flexibility. How about Jose Ramirez? I mean, that's a name I absolutely love. He's been playing more third base. He could, you know, play there or second. You can do a bunch of different things with him. You know, I would love to see them think big and think about ways they can improve their roster for the next few years.
This one for all of us. Headed to the ballpark tonight. What I need to know is the best vendor for a good meal.
What do you like to do at a ballpark for food?
See, I always get the basics like hot dog and the popcorn, pretzel, like that basic stuff. Although, I almost went to Din Tai Fung. It's a popular choice for people
dumplings.
That were near me.
Mm-hmm.
Soup dumplings? You like soup dumplings from Din Tai Fung?
I like everything from Din Tai Fung.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
The whole menu.
You got to do the other one, though, that's like Din Tai Fung, but it's not them. It's, what's that place called? The Dumpling House or something? It's, I swear to God, it's every bit as good.
What's the best vendor that you've had? Or what's the best food you've had at the park?
Well, if you can go upstairs all the way out in left field, they have fish and chips. I forget what the place is called, but the fish and chips out there are outrageous.
If you go all the way out in the right field corner, they've got a build-your-own pasta bar.
Really?
Whoa, yeah. What?
Is it new?
Is
no,
it secret?
It's been there.
Do you have to know like
it's
a secret
there.
Clubhouse
It's on the
word?
All-star club level.
Wow.
But yeah, you get to choose, I believe, the noodle, the sauce, the meat. All that goes into it. They cook it up right there in front of you.
I mean, I say these things as if I do anything other than just sit in the Diamond Club, so.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. I just sit in the bleachers and find popcorn people leave behind.
They
That's
still have
what I
bleachers?
Do.
I mean, the unwashed masses? No thanks.
God. Someone said, break the stigma. Get garlic fries.
I've never once ordered the garlic fries. I've never done that. It doesn't feel right at a baseball game to me.
Let's see. Someone said...
Dozone. Thank you. The Dozone. You ever been to the Dozone?
No.
Right by the
Is
Paramount.
Is it a dumpling place?
Yes. Right by the Paramount. Every bit as good as Din Tai Fung. Maybe better and cheaper.
What I need to know, what would you do with Kyle Seager's option? That question was on here. Just slipped back down. What would you do for Kyle Seager in 2022?
I'm just not a fan. Like, to me, I would deal Seager now. I know people don't like that, but
that
I would deal.
Guarantees his option for next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, not for you.
You're still paying it, though.
Depending on how the deal works.
Yeah, if you could get a team to say, yeah, we'll pick up X percentage of his player option next year.
Yeah.
But well, maybe teams you also, why would you put yourself on the hook for like $8 million next year to get rid of him 2 months earlier than you needed to?
You're probably not.
All right.
That.
Two questions for you guys. 310 says, headed to the game tonight as well. What's the best way to troll the Astros from the outfield? I mean, I don't know how you get away from the banging on garbage cans thing. It's the easiest thing in the world.
Hasn't this already... We've already seen the Astros
Can
here,
the
right?
pen
we've been
lift up a
now?
Garbage can collectively and bang on it?
Probably.
I think that's what I would do.
I don't know. Man, they've been experiencing this now for the last year. It doesn't seem to be slowing them down.
No, because they don't feel bad.
Right.
Well, no, and they're also phenomenal.
They're really good. Whatever you're doing is not working.
No, first in average and second in OPS, I think. I think they're second or third in home runs. It's just, man, the conversation we're going to be having. Imagine if the Mariners sweep the Astros.
I think you mean when the Mariners sweep
You're right.
The Astros.
That's absolutely what I meant. Yeah.
Darren McCacken on the mound. I don't know if you know this or not, Stacey. He's never allowed a hit in his major league career.
There you go. Never allowed a run either.
I think he did allow a run, though.
Okay, well, that's exactly what I
Robert
said.
Duggar.
He's only allowed one
But he's
one
never
run.
Allowed a hit. That's going to continue tonight. Colin, no-hitter. Darren McCacken.
Wow.
What I need to know, where should I go to dinner tonight, Wildfin or Lobster Shop?
I don't know either of those places,
but lobster is delicious. What I need to know, this person wants to know, hey, we need an outfielder, right? The only one who's producing is Haniger, and he can't carry an outfield batting-wise. I don't know that you need an outfielder, although I think this person points out an important thing about, like, the depth is certainly more shallow than you thought.
Yeah, I mean, again, what's been so funky about this team is they just walk that razor's edge between being terrible and being great.
Yes.
I mean, like, you could get swept by the Astros, you could sweep the Astros, you could win those three games against the A's. They could have lost any one of them to have been swept by the A's. I mean, they really walk this razor's edge. It's not a bad point about some of the depth issues in the outfield. I just think they have bigger concerns. And by the way, someone like Merrifield has enough positional flexibility to be able to play in the outfield if you need him.
One person wanting to know the pitching lineup. I'll pull that up in just a second. So I'll throw you a question in the meantime, which is, are there any other names outside of a second baseman that you would want? So, like, we've been talking about starting pitchers and second baseman exclusively. Is there anyone else?
I'll admit I wanted Nelson Cruz. That kind of passed by the wayside. I think someone like Ramirez is interesting. We mentioned Jose Ramirez. He'd probably get him to play second base. Trevor Story, if you were dealing Kyle Seager, you could have him come in and play third and sort of set up a situation for the future. But, yeah, most of my focus really has been at starting pitching. Yes, I'd like to see a right-handed bat. Second base would be the best spot for him. But starting pitching, to me, is the key.
Last thing really here is an important one. What I need to know, when is a realistic time frame to be concerned about Kelnick if this keeps up?
Oh, I don't think you're concerned about him unless he doesn't work out next year.
you think not until 2022 and well into 2022?
Yeah. I mean, if he comes out, if he does nothing the rest of this year and struggles to start next year, I think there'll be some very real concern.
All right,
but that's a long way off.
Darren McCacken on the mound for the Mariners tonight. Chris Flexen, probable for Tuesday, Wednesday, Yusei Kikuchi. All right, that'll do it for us today. Mike, thanks for filling in. You're going to be back with us Tuesday and Thursday.
Big week.
Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next. This is 710 ESPN Seattle.